is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, the top story is definitely China, and the G7 is in the full run right now in France. Obsession, recession. There's a lot of obsessions coming out of Washington, but that certainly is a big one now that has taken over the racist talk for the moment here. Let's get to the top stories here, friends, and welcome in here Dennis Santiago. He's an American strategist, a philosopher, and patriot here. Focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst. Here, she's a political commentator and host at America Out Loud. She's an author of her newest book. You'll find all her books on the America Out Loud bookstore. Newest one is Hamas, the story of Islamic Jihad on Israel's front lines. Welcome both to you. And let's get to the big, big story here, which really is going to be China and the G7 here, which is happening right now. So this is the world's two largest economies that are in a battle right now for world domination. What I would say is you might even say the future has arrived a little early, and that's what I think is going on here. So on Friday, China unveiled a new round of tariffs on about $75 billion worth of U.S. goods, and this was the latest escalation now in this ongoing trade war that's putting a very heavy, heavy strain on the relationship. President Trump wrote on Twitter on Friday, he said, and I quote, "Our great American companies are hereby ordered to immediately start looking for an alternative to China, including bringing your companies home and making your products in the USA." And that kind of went on and on. There was a lot of effect from that. But another tweet said, "For all of the fake news reporters that don't have a clue as to what the law is relative to presidential powers, China, et cetera, looking at the Emergency Economic Powers Act of 1977, case closed." All right, so here's the thing. Does he have a right to do that? Ilana, what do you think? Does he have a right to order companies to get out of there and come back home?
Just his saying that may be enough to get the company executives who are over there in huge number of American companies to reconsider their strategic plan and move out of China, because it's also a warning. It wasn't saying, you know, this is an order, but it's also a warning to them, because if this war heats up anymore, their companies are going to be in trouble if they stay in China. So it may be the better part of wisdom to listen to the president and begin moving their operations elsewhere.
So you're saying there's a ripple effect, and there always is with anything the president says. It carries weight very clearly. But he claims, Dennis, he has the absolute right, he says, and those are the words he uses, to order U.S. companies to stop doing business with China, and that he would that this would involve using his what they're calling it broad executive authority in a new and unprecedented way under this 1977 law.
Remember this law in 1977 was passed. The Cold War was still heavy on. The openings of the doors to China were really, this is 77, right? So like it's Jimmy Carter era is just starting out, and Gerald Ford and at the time, really in the background, Richard Nixon was still pretty active in helping open the doors to China. So these powers were pretty sweeping. And they can be used now, and they can be used in two ways. You could try to do it for real, but more important, you can try to do it for diplomatic purposes. And it seems to be having effect, because every paper in China that I looked up after that came out was quoting that thing and going, "Yeah, oh yeah, that's real." So,
well, that's the ripple effect again, isn't it?
Yeah, the ripple effect isn't just on U.S. companies. The ripple effect is on the Chinese and the Chinese government, because, you know, we're playing a game of chicken here, right? With these tariffs, going tit for tat one after another, both countries trying to figure out what their position is in terms of how are they going to go forward. And it's in the context of there's a global, a global threat of recession surrounding it. Both countries are trying to bolster themselves so that they don't get impacted by whatever goes on in the rest of the planet. And so who isn't just bluffing and who's got real cards to play with? Then Trump's basically putting out there, goes, well, I got a card and this one's pretty powerful. What do you got? You know, and you can see in the Chinese press where even as much as a couple of weeks ago, they were being really, really boisterous about, you know, the U.S. is going to pay. After all these tweets started going back and forth, a bit more conciliatory tone. So, you know, the guy's wearing them down.
Well, let's remember now again that China, the economy is collapsing there. I mean, they're having a lot of challenges, and you got to remember China, it's a big dragon is what it is. There's a lot of people to feed there. There's a lot of mouths.
Yeah.
1.4 billion or so is a lot of mouths to feed, man. So listen to this one report, Dennis, I seen here, and I want you to respond to this here. And it was this: if China's retaliation on Friday was calculated to further panic Trump about the state of the U.S. economy amid growing fears of a slowdown that would complicate his reelection hopes next year, it has already succeeded. What do you say to that?
I think that's not true. I mean, you know, this is in the way that this stuff is evolving. China has had a very bad couple of weeks, right? I mean, there's people waving American flags, counting in the millions in the streets in Hong Kong, right? Xi Jinping has his own set of problems that he's trying to manage, and it hasn't really been a good time for him the last couple of weeks. And I really don't think when you look at press reports that are trying to judge who's panicking whom, that these are both at this point pretty experienced world leaders of very large economies. These are not people who blink. They're both calculating, and they both also understand that they don't really have the full backing of 100% to go to war, either even internally in each of their countries. They have factions that want things that they have to work with. You know, Jinping has Hong Kong. Donald Trump he's got troubles with the Federal Reserve. So, you know, and they're both showing up at the G7 going like, yeah, how are your people treating you? And I go, well, not so good. How about you? Well, it's not so good either.
But they both have internal. They both have internal struggles. What you're saying, yeah. I
mean, yeah, and you know, and if you look at what's coming out of the G7, they're both saying, "Hey, you know, let's talk some more because calmer heads need to prevail here."
Yeah. Well, there were three, Ilana, there were three R's that we've been talking about now for the past few years, and they were Russia. Well, there were two R's initially. Now there's a third. Russia, then it was racist, and now it is recession, okay? So one of the interesting things I seen here just this morning here, as this G7 is happening here, is that President Trump says he has had second thoughts on escalating the trade war with China. And then one publication said, a rare expression of regret from a president prone to doubling down on his tactics. Now, what's interesting about this is he really didn't quite say it that way, but he did reference the fact that, you know, he was asked by a reporter, you know, do you have any regrets? Are you sorry? And he said, yeah. I said, I have a lot of second thoughts. Well, the media took that comment about the fact he has lots of second thoughts about everything, and they ran with it. And now you'll see it coming up here throughout the day here. What do you think? You think the president does have legitimate second thoughts on this, or you think it's full steam forward?
The president is a man who believes in strategy, and he is above all things a negotiator. I think he reconsiders every move. He said, I have second thoughts about everything. Might as well, he said, have second thoughts. It's okay. He does. Because he, as the pieces move around, he has to rethink his strategy. And he's dealing with a country who has a mindset that is very, very different from ours. And you have to remember that Xi Jinping has to answer to a Politburo. He isn't all powerful over everything. And last weekend, he had a meeting, a secret meeting with his Politburo. We don't know what happened there. He just disappeared for a few days. And but I would suspect that they were pretty firm with him about what he should do about Hong Kong and what he should do about the United States, and that he should take a strong stand against Trump. And so you have, as you said before, two very, very strong people who don't give in easily, are interested, I suppose, I'm sure that she is interested in heading off a major economic disaster in China. Mm-hmm. But his view of what is an economic disaster is different from ours. And in the meantime, Hong Kong is beginning to implode because there have been, what now, 11 weeks of demonstrations that have really affected the Hong Kong economy, and the fact that Hong Kong is a huge financial center for that part of the world is now at risk.
Yeah. You know, let me read you. You mentioned Hong Kong. You both have, because we know that's a hot button right now. Ilana, let me read you this here little statement. This is a hell of a statement again, a simple sentence here. But listen to this. China will lash out, injecting the poison of fentanyl into America's bloodstream, provoking international incidents in Hong Kong, the South China Seas, and possibly in Taiwan. What this was happening is this one reporter was talking about the hotspots that Xi Jinping is dealing with here. You know, he's got a lot of fronts, again, he's playing with here that he's having to combat again. But I don't think any of them are as much of a ding to his economy as his trade deal with Trump is. And without trade with the U.S., what does the future look like really and legitimately, Ilana, for China?
Without the U.S., I think the future is pretty bleak for China because we're his biggest trading partner. I think if Xi were to unleash a flow of fentanyl to the United States, he would be hit so hard by Trump, because that is very, very high on Trump's agenda.
But isn't he already doing that, Ilana? Aren't they already killing us with fentanyl?
It's coming. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's still coming. He hasn't. Yeah. He promised to stop it, and he didn't stop it.
That's exactly.
And that's part of. Yeah, that's part of what Trump is so angry about. Because
but he put that
us.
In a tweet too. He put Trump put that in a tweet just the other day here. It's amazing that we're doing foreign policy by tweets the way we do it. But that's exactly how, and the whole world is doing that now. You know, the whole world is communicating via Twitter. It just blows your mind how we do this today, Dennis, compared to what it was back yonder. You know, I mean, now it's just put it out there on Twitter, let it resonate with people. And of course, it becomes very strategic in nature. But what about these? Where does this end with the trade war? You know, I talk about dragon politics here. I mean, Ilana just says, and let's speak specifically about this. Now, they're both dug in. Now, Xi Jinping, he's got people to answer for, but he also has been appointed president for life. He also, there's an enormous amount of pride in China. They don't back down easy at all. Without giving them any grace here, the chances of them backing off of this trade war are probably slim to none, Dennis. And that's me saying that. I think he'll go down with the boat at that point. I don't see. Do you disagree with that statement?
Well, if you listen to the rhetoric coming out of China, yeah, I mean you would have to conclude that the way I read the Chinese though, and the way I is that so Xi Jinping has a problem in that he has cronyism rampant throughout his government structure. You know, even he promised to remove fentanyl from the world market. There is some sort of a lobbying, you know, the equivalent of a lobbying group over there that says, no, we make our money off of that. You're not going to shut that down. He tried to make a reasonable deal with the United States on trade. And there were people in China that said, no, we're making money off of that. We're going to shut that down. So he's got those kinds of problems. The scenario for the Chinese could either go, they're either going to stay with these guys and let them drive their foreign policy, or they're going to start to shut some of these things down inside China. It'll be tumultuous. And if they do it the Chinese way, you know, with a lot of bodies, because that's how things are changed in that part of the world. But they've got some tough choices to make in terms of what they allow which industries, interest groups survive this this period of readjustment that the world is demanding on them, and who knows how that's going to go. They will make adjustments, and because they have to, they have no choice. The world economy and their international relations are forcing them down that way. It's kind of the same as, you know, there's companies in the United States. Wall Street does not like Trump imposing tariffs because, you know, they go like, no, we make money off of that. We'd rather you didn't. And, you know, and Trump's going like, no, you don't understand. I have to manage this balance of trade thing somehow, and you're not helping. Right. Yeah. So the same kinds of groups exist in both countries. These are complex issues for both of these guys.
They are complex, and they're long-term issues, really, that are and they've been created over a long period of time. They didn't happen overnight exactly here. So while we're at the G7, I also want to talk about the full trade spectrum. There's also talk about a trade deal with Japan possibly coming over there. Of course, President Trump has a great relationship with Shinzo Abe, and there's talk about that potentially coming out of the G7. Ilana, what do you think about that? That could really help. Well, actually, that and the confirmation of the USMCA with Canada and Mexico could also be a big pat on the back as far as this mess with China goes, you think?
Well, I think it would be good for anything that we do with Japan, I think is good for us. I think Japan is a good partner for us. But it will also be good for Japan. You know, their 10-year government bond yield is minus 0.23%. Wow. Ours is 1.53. And yeah, we're plus, but Germany, France, Netherlands, Switzerland, and Japan are all minus. And this is... this is the world economy going the wrong way. So I think anything we do with Japan will be good for both of us.
Yeah. Ilana, that is a really great point you mentioned right there about the world economy. And Dennis, a lot of people are not focused on exactly what Ilana says there. The world economy has been in decline here, and it's hurting. The only one that is above board, which he's just said, is the United States. Now we have the media all in unity and step, hoping and praying for recession, all of these scare tactics that are out there that are scaring the hell out of people. This could have an effect here in the country here, a lot of this propaganda and media that's being floated about recession, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think it's very dangerous talk, by the way. The inside the United States, people are trying to encourage a global decline. I mean, a recession in the United States, given the numbers that Ilana just pointed out, means a depression in the rest of the world. We don't want that. Okay. And so these people that are saying, hey, it'd be good because maybe we can win an election in the United States. They don't understand what they're about to plunge the rest of the planet into, but the rest of the planet does. So these deals with Japan, these deals with Canada, Mexico that are coming around, this is all the United States continuing to be a leading force in maintaining global stability. That's a good thing, not just for the United States. It's a good thing for planet Earth.
That's right. That's right. And we'll end it right there in the lead here story here, friends. Big thank you to Dennis Santiago, Ilana Friedman. Now, what we'll do now is switch it up just a little bit here. We're going to get into the rest of the news right now with all of our other top stories. We've got a whole litany list of them right now coming at you here. Just stay right there, friends, as Viewpoint rolls on.
America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. On our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Again, the president's tweet he puts out there, he says the economy is strong and good, whereas the rest of the world is not doing so well, despite the fake news media, together with their partner, the Democrat Party, are working overtime to convince people that we are in or will soon be going into a recession. They're willing to lose their wealth or be a big part of it just for the possibility of winning the election. And of course, people, that's what it always comes back to, as I say to you all the time, it's all about winning the election, clearly. Well, the president puts that tweet out there, and what's ironic about it is he talks about the rest of the world. That's exactly where he is on this weekend, as we were just talking about with the G7. And it's interesting how the president doesn't back down. He puts it out there. Let's talk about some of the top stories here. There is more news, by the way, going on in the world besides just the G7. Oh, that is a big story with China there. Let's bring on here Jim McKay. Jim is a political analyst, a commentator, radio producer here at America Out Loud. He has a 30-year background in global technology and telecommunications and pharmaceuticals. Ilana Friedman is back with us. She's a veteran intelligence analyst and political commentator and host here at America Out Loud. And so the headlines and some of the things that they're saying, you know, the comments are just coming fast. I mean, there's so many of them. I don't even know where to start, buddy. The comments from the media, of course, are outrageous. Because, you know, is the U.S. economy at risk of tipping into recession? And, you know, and these are the kinds of things. John King of CNN says that. And Stephanie Ruhle of MSNBC, it's about time we get a recession. And so they're all wishing for a recession. You know, I don't ever remember such a time where they were so blatant and so honest about how they wanted to see the country sink, Jim. But that's really what's happening, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they're, you know, looking for straws now, anything to grab onto. I mean, somebody said the other day, they've done the three R's. They've done Russia, they've done race, and now they're looking at recession. They're out of, their quiver is out of arrows. They have nothing left to shoot for this election. And, you know, when you talk about these comments, I mean, Biden went off and, you know, in saying how wonderful the economy was under Obama, Biden administration. He left this to Trump, and Trump has squandered it, is I think the words he used. But there is nothing wrong with the fundamentals of the economy. I mean, Walmart had a all-time record sales for the month of July. So, and they're the biggest retailer in the world.
Yeah, well, a lot of what is happening here is President Trump is he's trying to fix some long-term problems, which I was speaking about earlier. It's unusual that an administration will play more long-term strategy, Ilana, than short-term gain. And that's we don't normally see that in our politicians. But you're seeing that now, even with an election cycle looming, where Trump has taken on the big problem here that we've been dealing with for decades, which is China, of course, we've been speaking about here. But, you know, to Jim's point right there, if you can believe this and get a load of this, Ilana. So Joe Biden really said what he just said. Donald Trump inherited a growing economy from the Obama-Biden administration, just like he inherited everything else in his life. And now he squandered it, just like he squandered everything he inherited in his life. It's a hell of a talking point, isn't it, Ilana? Huh?
It's a hell of a talking point, but it's Joe Biden saying it. So, you know, you can't take it seriously. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I would say something different. You know, this talk about recession, I think it started with Bill Maher. He was the one who said that he hopes for a recession because that way we'll get rid of Donald Trump. Same. Well, you know, these are very rich people saying that they hope for a recession because a recession won't hurt them at all. It's going to hurt the rest of us, the rest of America, who works hard and works from day to day for you know, whatever salary they can get. And frankly, the salaries are better now than they used to be because of Trump. So, but a recession will hurt everybody. And I think the thing that really triggered this for the investors was there were a couple of days when we had a inverted yield curve, which means that the interest rates on U.S. Treasuries. And so everybody starts saying, oh, that's a signal for recession, recession. The only thing is that the inversion was about 0.1%, 1 point. It was just silly. And it switched in a matter of minutes or hours. So it was not a sign of anything. It was simply, a fluke.
Yeah.
So I think every analyst that I have heard that I have respect for has said there is no recession coming.
Right.
The economy is strong and we're going to be fine.
I did a little research in this. You know, I'm always doing the number stuff. And there's a group that's called the National Association of Business Economists. These are the guys that measure real things, not the fake government numbers. You know, these are of 300 or 400 economists of the biggest corporations in the world. And they said, yeah, they expect a recession, but sometime either after 2021 is where they're hedging their bets. And it was 70% of the economists of a group of about 200 or 300 that were saying this.
I mean, it's going to happen at some point, clearly. But wishing for it and praying for it is not exactly a good political strategy, clearly. And the media, of course, is doing that as well, and so many others. It's countless how many people out there are saying this. But there's another obsession as well that's going on, and that actually plays right into what we're talking about here. And that is the reason they're actually wishing for the recession. And that is the obsession with impeachment here. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she isn't ready quite yet to launch the impeachment proceedings against President Trump. She told House Democrats just this past Friday here, the public isn't there on impeachment. What a message, you know. She said that the case needs to be as strong as possible. And then she lays out, Jim, the strategy and says, if and when we act, people will know he gave us no choice, Pelosi said. And this, you know, what's amazing to me is that they're actually putting out their strategy. I mean, think about this a moment, people. In terms of having a strategic objective as a political party, it really rattles the mind that their objective and their one objective, and the speaker puts it right out there in the middle of the daylight. Listen, when there's a problem, don't worry about it. We'll be in there. We'll be impeaching his sorry ass. I mean, it's amazing that this stuff is going on, McKay.
Yeah, they're nuts on this thing because they all know that impeachment in the House is only a one-vote majority to do it. So if they go in there and they spend next 4 or 5 months going through more hearings and all, and they do have an impeachment vote, big deal, because it's dead on arrival in the Senate. They need 67 votes in the Senate to convict him.
Well, it's the formality of scarring his record and marring him up as much as they can. It's a bully yard fight there. I don't see this impeachment thing. It's not going to go away. In fact, I imagine if he does win the next election, Ilana, this will be going on for the next 4 years as well. In fact, I'm not sure this country is going to be able to withstand what happens after the 2020 elections.
Now, Jerry Nadler has said he has called for the whatever impeachment documents means. That's what he's called for. And he's ready to move ahead with impeachment proceedings. But I think what they're going to do is try to run out the clock and then have all this stuff that they're collecting just dumped just before the election.
That's exactly The other big story, Ilana, the Department of Homeland Security moves to end these limits on the migrant detention. And this goes back to the 1997 Flores rule, which really provided safe protection, as I say, for the migrant children. After that, it was about 2015 that a judge said, well, okay, but there's a 20-day limit or you got to release them. And that's been really became the magnet as to the attraction to illegal immigration on the border. Well, this has been bouncing back and forth now. And so now what's happening is, the president is trying to change the rules on that, extend it out to maybe up to a couple of months, 60 days, build the proper facilities, do what's got to be done, but they're not liking it. And this is a real problem. Now, I want to read you this quote, Ilana, from Warren Binford, a Williamette University law professor, says the Flores was never intended as being a permanent protection of these children's rights. Now, it was an agreement that said the government was going to establish permanent protection for children's rights. And so far, Congress has not stepped in to make it law. Congress hasn't done a darn thing about this, Ilana. It's unbelievable that we're still talking about this, you know?
You know, it's a very difficult issue that we're dealing with because the Democrats have created such a fog of misinformation about this whole process. And they've been screaming about the children who are separated from their parents, and they're screaming about the children living in cages and so forth. And what's interesting is that this policy of separating families and putting children in cages was a product of the Obama administration, not the Trump administration. And Trump, in fact, is the one who ended it. So, and even the photographs that they used to show children in cages were the ones that were taken before 2016.
Yeah.
So this is all, first of all, based on a pack of misinformation and lies, and these are intentional. I don't believe there's...
Oh, they're totally intentional. Intentional.
Yeah, I don't believe this is a mistake of any kind.
No. It's about as a polarizing conversation as there could be. One of the interesting things, Jim, that we have seen these last few days, and you've seen the same report, I am sure that most people have, which was really a stunning eye-opener this year. 64% of arrests that the federal government made in 2018 were non-U.S. citizens. And this is from the Justice Department's Bureau of Justice Statistics. Now, think about what I just said, people. Think about what I just said. 64% of arrests that the feds have made were from people that were here illegally, the non-U.S. citizens for the most part. Jim, that's some kind of number, isn't it?
It's amazing. You know, the numbers, they deny the numbers. The Democrats say, first, it was no crisis. It was all manufactured. We remember that in, I guess that was January through March. Then they decided it was a humanitarian crisis. And they've always said, illegals are safer than our own population. Well, here we have almost two-thirds of all federal crimes being attributed to non-U.S. citizens, and whether they're, you know, European, African, South American, Central American, doesn't matter. It's still two-thirds of federal prosecutions. And the number for that year was almost 200,000 arrests, wow, which is, it's mind-boggling to deny that's going on.
Yeah. Let's jump overseas a moment here, Ilana, and talk about this warning that caught my eye coming out of Japan. And their message was that North Korea now has miniaturized nukes that are small enough to fit on its ballistic missiles. And what they called it, quite frankly, is a serious and imminent threat. As Kim Jong-un has his little temper tantrums every week here, what do you make of this with Japan and the warning here? And what kind of a game is Kim Jong-un playing at this point?
Well, let me say this. I have been warning about this since January 2014, when I wrote an article, that's good 5.5 years ago, I wrote an article about how Iran and North Korea were collaborating on nuclear development. And Iran moved a lot of its equipment, its scientists, and members of the IRGC to protect their activities so that they would avoid UN inspectors. Mm-hmm. And what they were working on were three things: the miniaturization of a warhead, the development of a plutonium bomb, and a delivery system. Those are the three things they were working on, and they continued to work on it until last year, when you remember that their test site, where they tested five of these bombs, the test site started to collapse. So this is something that is simultaneously happening in North Korea and in Iran. They are both showing that they have the capacity for having miniaturized these warheads so that they can fit on their missiles. The Iranian missile is the one they're using is slim. It's slim. It's a slender missile, and so it needs a smaller warhead. And North Korea is clearly benefiting from all this joint research. I'm not surprised at all that this is finally coming out, and I would be surprised if it didn't.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the problem with a lot of this is that we never know, Jim, when one of these cats, one of these crazy leaders, one of the dictators, or quite frankly, or some terrorist group or some radical nut job gets in there and the weapons fall into the wrong hands or something happens. I mean, you visualize this, and what a sad day it will be if one of these go off in a major city somewhere. I mean, you're talking just complete devastation. This is serious business.
Yeah, and you know, most people don't realize how close we've come to that exact happening in the last 50 years. You know, under the assured mutual destruction scenario, the MAD with the Soviet Union, and putting those things aside eventually with re-aiming missiles in SALT II, we've come within minutes of that happening, actually, going to DEFCON 1. the worst thing now is you have all these weapons just in the hands of, well, just look at Pakistan and India. Both of them are nuclear powers. And they've been fighting, you know, this Kashmir thing is reaching a head again. And just takes one person in one silo at one base to push a button, go rogue, and you have a nuclear exchange. And once the genie's out of the bottle and one guy fires at one place, this is not going to be a Dr. Strangelove fail-safe movie scenario. There's going to be Holocaust.
Not safe at all. Listen, I want to change the tempo here, and I want to talk about this report of the Justice Supreme Court here. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been struggling with her health for a few years now, and actually she's struggled with this cancer for the past decade. She has pancreatic cancer, and she's having some very aggressive treatment. They call it a cutting-edge new cancer treatment, but it's not a cure, the doctor said, for this pancreatic mass. Now, clearly, she's in a tough way, although I have to tell you, she is one tough woman. Here's the thing, Alana, about this story that I cringe when it comes up, because as soon as they start talking about this with the justice, the right immediately, quite frankly, the right starts talking about the fact that it's kind of a wink-wink, because immediately the people on the right who really want to replace her with someone else, we know, we're really worried about her health. Is she okay? Is it, yes, we're really concerned. And of course, the people on the left, they start planning for how they're going to battle Trump. You talk about the Kavanaugh thing. The next one will be a nuclear explosion within the congressional hearings for this one. We've never seen anything like what will happen next, I'm sure, if something happens to Ginsburg. But it's amazing to me how the left and right immediately start positioning Ilana on this story. Pretty serious stakes here at play, aren't they?
I don't know when cancer became a political issue, but this woman has been battling three different kinds of cancer over the course of the last few years. She is one tough lady, and she what she is going through with all this treatment, it's painful, it's sickening, and yet she shows up for work and she keeps on plugging away. And my gosh, I wish the very, very best for her. I hope, you know, God is watching over her, because she deserves the best she can get. And as far as the politics are concerned, I think it's disgusting. You know, she's the one who has to retire. Nobody can force her to retire.
Ilana, thank you for saying that. That is a I mean, that is a perfect thing to say, and truly, truly it is, Ilana, because you're so right, and the rudeness of all of this is beyond anything I can put into words. Jim, you want to it's pretty out there. I mean, what they're saying and about all this, it's become sort of a, how do I say, Jim? It's become a social media meme. And I'm talking about the justice herself, Ginsburg. It's a meme out there with the left and the right. But it's pretty sad in our country, huh?
Terribly. I've had personal experience losing somebody to pancreatic cancer. And it is devastating, not only to the individual when they go through it, but to the whole family. And to politicize it is disgusting. That's the only word I have for it.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. And I'm glad we covered it in the way we just did, people, because it's important that, you know, life is precious for everybody. But here's a woman who has fought the good fight. Whether you like her politics or ideology, that is not what I'm talking about, okay? But I got to tell you this. The political leaders and the buffoons in Washington could take some lessons from this amazing woman, really. And by the way, she has come out in recent times to say some very good things about the new justices on the court. She has held, I think, a proper ground. I think she's been very, very justice-like. Let's put it that way. Very justice-like. And I give her credit for what that is. And enough said, but I think it's important we touch on that. Okay, talking about crazy people or buffoons, I wanted to talk to you about the Obamas. They're buying. I don't think that the deal has been closed yet, but they've been vacationing on Martha's Vineyard, a mansion right on the ocean side there, and a beautiful property. They liked it so much, they want to buy it. And it's amazing how you can do that on a meat week a presidential salary is truly amazing. I can't imagine how they'd raise $15 million. I'm challenged to understand that, Ilana, how they could raise that kind of money on the poor president's salary, huh? But anyways, what we're really worried about here, let me get to the point here, is the global warming of when the water rises and it takes out that house. I'm very concerned with the climate change up in Massachusetts, especially with all the hot air coming from the liberal politics here. What do you think, Ilana?
Well, first of all, I find it very interesting that when Obama went into the White House, his net worth was something like $300,000. And when he left the White House 8 years later, his net worth was $40 million. So you tell me how he did that. That's a terrific trick. But in any case, I would like to point out, I mean, if I were advising him, I would advise him to be very careful, because in 12 years, according to his own advisors, Martha's Vineyard will be underwater. And I don't know why unless he's got a good scuba suit or, you know, good equipment for underwater living, I don't know why he's doing this. He must know something we don't know.
Oh, I know. Jim, I knew this segment would be a comedy hour. What do you think?
Well, I think he's probably going to take a 30-year mortgage and hope in 12 years it goes under and the insurance pays off on the debt.
They use more of the energy and the fossil fuels than any of us do. I mean, they'll use in one jet spin out there or one yacht run. Anyways, enough said. You know what? You know, if you practice what you preach or shut the hell up and move the ball along, please. You're holding up the line at the shop and checkout. If we need to move on and get on with the day. Thank you very much. All right. Well, so listen in. So let me move this segment along exactly. And I want to talk to you next about this amazing story coming out of New York. Where the NYPD officers, and this is in the Pantaleo firing, and I mean, this was amazing because they came out and the many of the officers up there and the union chief said the job is dead. This is, I think, another pivotal moment of law enforcement in America. Lieutenant Randy Sutton, Blue Lodge, joins us in the next segment. Friends, stay right there as Viewpoint rolls on.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, it's hard to believe, first of all, that it's been 5 years since this controversial death there of Eric Garner. It was another one in a series of big national stories. You know, it's all became a big controversy. And all of it has kind of fed into the narrative of the war on cops, really, that you've seen. I want to talk about that next because there's been a big developments in this story with the NYPD Commissioner James O'Neill. He fired the officer, Daniel Pantaleo, over the death of Garner. But what's really interesting to me, this is another soundbite that I think you'll remember for a long time, because he said the job is dead. I want to talk about that next. There's a lot to say about this. Anyways, let me bring on here Lieutenant Randy Sutton, and no better one to talk about with this kind of topic than the voice of law enforcement people. He's a 34-year law enforcement veteran, retired from the Las Vegas Police Department. And as you know by now, he's the founder of the Wounded Blue. And if you don't know that, please find out more about that, thewoundedblue.org. You'll hear we have a national spot running on the network, and you'll hear it out there for the Wounded Blue. We'll talk more about that a bit after here. But let's get into this NYPD firing here. Patrolman's Benevolent Association President Patrick Lynch was at a news conference. He was pretty livid. I mean, he pretty emotional. He said it's absolutely essential that the world knows that the New York City Police Department is rudderless and frozen. The leadership has abandoned ship and left our police officers on the street alone without backing. And he went on to reference, Randy, Chicago, Baltimore, other big problems we're having out there. What do you say?
I say that he is right on. The firing of Daniel Pantaleo was in and of itself a surrender. Law enforcement surrendered to politics. And the fact that the largest police department in the country terminated a guy who did nothing wrong to satisfy the political appetite of the mayor, who was about as anti-law enforcement as they get, the social justice warriors who are basically now running the country. It was a symbol to not only the New York City police officers, but every police officer in this country.
Yeah. The ramifications of this are going to be felt, I mean, quite a bit here. Some of the comments coming out of there was morale was already low. This was just the nail in the coffin. Now, on that point, Randy, is, you know, when you mention that the mayor, de Blasio here, I just don't understand. Isn't the job more important? Isn't the future more important for law enforcement than de Blasio? This guy is, I got to tell you, he ultimately, I mean, he sold everybody out. I mean, he's got to be considered a loser now.
He was always considered a loser by the police department. I mean, first thing he did when he took office was he fanned the flames of the racial divide by talking about how he had to school his children about the police and about how to survive a police encounter. So he started off making enemies with the police right off the bat, and his tenure as mayor has been nothing but an anti-law enforcement narrative. So he never had the respect of the men and women of the job there. The head of the department, the police commissioner, is the one who was ultimately making the decision. Now, according to the sources from the PBA and from the Sergeants Benevolent Association, who I can tell you are very in tune with the reality of what happened here, they had a deal with the commissioner, and he was not going to be terminated on a Friday. During that weekend, suddenly it changed and they fired him. So according to the PBA and the Sergeants Benevolent Association, what occurred during the weekend was a huge political pressure on the commissioner to fire him, and he apparently succumbed to that pressure. Yeah. You see, here's where this is so dangerous, Malcolm. Every police officer in this country is going to have to use force on an individual sometime or another. That is to be expected. That is the norm. There will be people that resist, that you have to go hands-on. And anytime you go hands-on with someone, anytime that you have a use of force, there is the possibility that it can go bad and somebody can die. Sometimes not on purpose. Because they're, you know, when people get in fights, their adrenaline goes up. They have physiological issues. They have disease. There's all kinds of factors that play a role here, as was demonstrated in the Eric Garner case. Eric Garner didn't die from being choked out, which is how the narrative is being played. He died because of the exertion of everything, and his own physical condition, and the fact that he's the one that resisted arrest. And every cop knows that they're going to have to go hands-on. So if they look at this and they go, oh my God, I can go through 5 years of hell, because that's what this Pantaleo did. I mean, they put him they demeaned him. They put him, you know, in a position to count paperclips. And then they waited 5 years to do an investigation. All the other investigations were done and said that he didn't do anything illegal. Now the department comes and says, 5 years later, they make a decision like this. It is demoralizing to the entire law enforcement community. I assume that they're going to appeal this because now this is, you know, this is a very symbolic, this is a very symbolic issue now.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, if I were Pantaleo, would I want to go back to that police department? Hell no.
Yeah.
You know, this is where law enforcement leadership around the country is not getting it. There's already a huge retention problem with keeping cops and hiring cops. Nobody wants to take the job anymore.
There's a bigger motive here, and the motive really comes back to an unlawful society, and it comes back to these groups like Antifa and so many of these domestic terrorist groups, and they need to be called that, by the way. And that's what's happening here. There's a motive here, and there are people behind all of this that want to see that unrest in our country. You agree with that statement?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at what just took place in San Francisco. I mean, San Francisco is so screwed up. I mean, they have the poop patrol, for God's sake. They're paying people $70,000 a year to pick up all of the excrement that's all over the streets because of the leadership of that city, because they allow it. They don't have enough problems. Now the Board of Supervisors has now decreed that the language will be changed when the criminal justice system is referring to convicts and felons. They can no longer call them convicts and felons because they have proposed, quote, person first language.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Where now nobody can use the words felon, offender, convict, addict, juvenile, delinquent. They now want them to be called justice involved or formerly incarcerated persons, or even, you're going to love this one, returning residents. See, this is the insanity. This is the government of a major city who is so immersed in this ludicrous social justice movement that they are willing to devote resources and time to something as ridiculous as this.
Yeah. So I want to take just a couple of minutes. I don't want to lose time to talk about this other story because it was in the news the last couple of days, and that is the Parkland school shooting survivors. And they are proposing a comprehensive plan for gun control. They're getting a lot of earwaves on this. And this was after, of course, the mass shooting in 2018 in Parkland, Florida. They're proposing a bold action, they're saying, to reduce gun violence by half over the next decade. And they're pointing several steps out here, Randy, that I wanted to get your thoughts on. They say here their aim is to get at the root causes of gun violence. Well, okay, get it. Mentally disturbed people would be part of that, obviously, a big part of it. And open a dialogue, they're saying, about gun use in America. And so this is after El Paso, of course, in Dayton, Ohio. In the past couple of weeks here, we've had some real challenges here. So they're calling, Randy, for legislative action in D.C. to create a national licensing and registry system. And that's one, a ban on assault weapons again in high capacity magazines, and policies like a red flag law to disarm gun owners and pose a risk to themselves or others. And also, get a load of this. You'll love this one, Randy. A national gun buyback program. Well, nothing could go wrong with this program, could it, buddy?
This is all rehashed stuff that's never worked before, and it's not going to work now. The gun buyback program is a joke. It's been done in a number of cities. And what it's really done is people will, like, even criminals will bring in guns that basically don't work, you know, all garbage guns, and then get money, and then they go spend it on, what do you think they're going to spend it on? Who knows? Maybe guns. They're the ones that work. It's never worked in any city. It's never affected the crime rate whatsoever.
Randy, is there a short answer to the gun problem we're having, the crazy people who have? Is there a short answer to this?
There is somewhat of an answer.
What is it?
And that is there. Every law, there's tons of laws. To throw another law at this problem is not going to solve the problem. Let's look at Chicago. The highest murder rate in the country, and they have the most stringent gun laws in the country. The problem is not that the laws don't exist. The problem is that they are not being applied. Right now in the city of Chicago, is murder against the law, Malcolm?
Right? Exactly, so exactly.
Right now, 59 murderers who are on house arrest
right now.
There was one weekend where the police were said, go out and have a gun sweep. And they made 57 arrests or 59 arrests for guns. And the judge released every single one of them on their own recognizance.
Yeah.
So it's not that the laws don't exist. To create a whole array of new laws. Remember, laws only affect those who are willing to abide by them.
I can't get people to understand that point, Randy. I can't.
I know.
I don't understand it. Yeah,
it's heavy. It's already against the law to kill somebody. Yeah. Now you're going to make it against the law to try and stop some. It's madness.
It is madness. It is absolute madness what you're saying. And I just can't seem to convince some of these people. And I wonder where their intelligence factor is, because the simple math, Randy, is bad and evil and corrupt people don't follow laws, buddy. So you can put them on till the cows come home. It's not going to make a difference.
No, it's not. And the you're victim, right. The victims here wind up to be the honest citizen.
That's it.
Who really wants to protect themselves and their home.
That's it, buddy. You know, when you see the job that the men and women in law enforcement do, people, I mean, where would we be? We would have no country. There would not be a civil society here without our brothers and sisters in law enforcement. But plain English, you know. And it's why we hold them in such high regard here on this network here. But here's the thing is a lot of these men and women are being they're being tossed away. They're being mistreated from because of politically correctness and a whole lot of other crap, people. First of all, they don't get paid a lot of money, number one. You got to remember that. This is not a job you're going to get into to be ultimately wealthy. You get in this because you have a passion to do the right things, or you care about a civil society. You want to help people. You got to, like anybody is a first responder. It's about a care for another fellow human being, period. And you have that in your heart or you don't. It's real simple. And so here in this case here, a lot of these men and women are being tossed to the side. And then something happens. They get injured. They get hurt badly. Something happens, which is going to happen to a lot of these people. And it does. And then there's no restitution for them whatsoever. They don't have anything to fall on. They don't have the safety net. So that's where the Wounded Blue comes in. And that's it. This is a lifelong endeavor that our buddy here, Randy Sutton, has put together and has worked tirelessly, friends, to bring this out there. And so I want to give you a moment to just to say what's the progress look like and how's the organization doing? It's a new organization, by the way. But how's it going, Randy?
You know, it's been tremendous. This is Wounded Blue is actually the National Assistance and Support Organization for Injured and Disabled Law Enforcement Officers. Many, many officers, well, you know, last year about 57,000 police officers were physically attacked. That's a huge number. Many of those were injured. That includes shootings, stabbings, beatings. Then add to that the number of car accidents, the number of training accidents, when people get hurt while they're in a foot pursuit, and it's cops are getting seriously injured and disabled literally every single day, and many of the cities toss them aside. The stories are unbelievable. In fact, I urge your listeners to go to Amazon and download our documentary film, The Wounded Blue: Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. Because once you see this, you will want to step in and assist.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The documentary is really well done. I mean, I bought it myself. I've got it, people. You need to do the same thing. It's just a few bucks, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Just get the darn film. And it's a great documentary, but do yourself a favor as well. Watch it with your family. This is a great experiment for the kid. Again, if we're going to bring back respect, basic respect, and if we're going to understand the plight of so many, you gotta go look at the film. And then, you know what? And then, you know, take 50 bucks. I mean, so, Skip, I mean, how much money we spend at dinner, people out there. Starbucks or something else that God only knows. So take $50, and if everybody does that and puts $50 at thewoundedblue.org, it'll make a difference and allow the organization to do some of the things they got to do here. So that's the most important thing there. Well, listen, I want to thank Lieutenant Randy Sutton here for all of this here, and all of our people on Viewpoint, another great Viewpoint people in the books here. We will be watching the G7 very carefully in the next many days. It's all back at AmericaOutloud.com. Again, it's become the leading source for all of this sort of information and knowledge out here. So stay close, people. And again, we appreciate you being here on part of the journey here. Remember here, it's time to get involved and get loud.